Good afternoon and welcome to our meeting. It is 1:30 on July 25th, 2023, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. We're here with us today Commissioner Tony Folsom, Secretary John Harlow, CEO General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, General Counsel, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Ridge, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner. Commissioner Sidney Logan, Vice President, is absent. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. Copies of the agenda are located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the proposed agenda?
There are no items.
Comments from the public is item 2 on the agenda.
Sorry, I do have one change to the agenda.
Okay.
We will not be having an executive session today. We'll be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I apologize. I could not get my microphone to turn on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so as it was stated, General Counsel Colin Willenbrock has stated that we will not have an executive session today. So comments from the public is item 2 on the agenda. And that is when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and persons shall be recognized to speak from the sign-up cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. And I have those. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 by phone. Attendees will be called on to speak at the appropriate time. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you are from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter into the record, hand them to the deputy clerk, who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent separate from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. Would you please join me now for the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands,
a nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And now our general manager, John Harlow, will facilitate the discussion during a manager briefing and study session. Welcome, John.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Wolf. Good afternoon, Commissioner Olson. We have some great stuff on the agenda today. First up, community engagement update from Laura Zorich and David Krueger.
I know I have to talk a lot when I'm up here, but we have so much great stuff to talk about this month. And I'm really excited to have David, since he was intrinsically involved in a number of different really unique events this last month, get to share about them.
Thank you.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioners, my name is David Krueger. I'm a communications and marketing consultant, corporate communications at the PUD. I get to work with a lot of phenomenal events and community engagement. It's just a lot of fun, I think, having this job here at the district. We're in the heart of the summer event season, so I'm here today to give a community engagement report about all the ways we're getting out, because there's a lot going on right now. Go to the next slide. Oh, perfect. Thank you. The district's 36 Chevy has hardly been parked all summer. The beautiful truck found its way to parade around Snohomish County. It's recently at the Everett's 4th of July parade, the Sultan Shindig, the Tour de Terrace, and Klahaya Days parade in Snohomish. If you missed out on those events and still want to see it, don't worry. You still have a chance at Aquafest in Lake Stevens this weekend, the Stanwood Camino Fair next weekend, and then the Nuffield Hill Lighthouse Festival later this summer. And so we just wanted to extend a huge thank you to transportation, all those who essentially to drive the truck at events all over the county. and help get it out there to support these local events. One awesome event that we got to participate in again this year was the Everett 3-on-3 basketball tournament in downtown Everett a little over a week ago. It was an awesome event that brings thousands of people to Everett. They lined the streets with basketball courts featuring players of all ages, skill levels. It's just, it's super fun. In both years of the event, we've done pretty well with our two teams. This, after a strong string last year, Zip Zap Dunk, which this year featured Quentin, Patrick, Garrison, and Ryan, finished second in their bracket, all with a championship game. Electric Squirrels also had a great weekend. They were made up of David, Javon, Casey, and Konstantinos, who is why I'm only pronouncing first names. Getting all the way to the semifinals of their bracket.
I better pick up on that one.
Yeah, that was definitely a decision that was made deliberately. Konstantinos even played in an elite bracket too, and they had an announcer who also struggled with his name, so he's a professional, so I wasn't going to try and even attempt it. But I believe everyone is back to health now. I think everyone's kind of feeling good. I actually double checked with a few people, but it was just, we had people coming up to us at games all weekend telling us how awesome it was that we were there, how much they loved the PUD, just how enjoyable it was to have us at an event that's kind of in our backyard. And then we had a bunch of members of Team PUD come out and cheer us on too, which was super cool to see the support that they were given. So it was an awesome event to take part in. I'm hoping that next year we can get even more teams, have a women's team or a co-ed team. Usually there's three people up here that could be a team, maybe if you guys were interested. So so we'll be interested if you guys want to sign up, let me know.
I want to thank all those who participated.
It's a haul.
I
think they played six
games. Commitment.
Yeah, I think they played six games over 2 days.
You're kidding.
No, which is more than I could handle. And then even though it's summer, the district education team continues to find ways to engage with local students. On July 3rd, Heather Hurt, Laura, Zorik, our summer intern, Alex Walters, and I had the privilege of getting to wander around to three different schools, Edmonds and Linwood and Mountain Terrace, and play a game teaching students about the benefits of renewable versus non-renewable energy. I'm awful at guessing ages, but they ranged, I think, from like high schoolers to little ones who needed their parents to hold their hands to walk. So however old that is, maybe like two or three. It was really a fun experience seeing them run all over the field with blue, yellow, and white popsicle sticks, which represented hydro, solar, and wind energy, respectively. And while seeing the coal and other fossil fuels, which were the black popsicle sticks, were much more limited in what you could do with them. And so it's cool to see their kind of, that their brain's kind of picking up on that even at such a young age. And I think they're way smarter than I am already. So.
Yeah, a quick question.
Yeah.
Is this new?
Yeah, so this was. This was a new thing, the school district. They had like a lunch thing for kids. And so we, Heather was the one that organized it, and we went around to three different schools. It was the same program, just at three different schools. And so we went around, and Heather created the game for this event, and we had a lot of fun playing it. We'll probably use it at more events in the future.
This is really great.
And then for upcoming events, these are just a few of the upcoming events we have for the district that we'll be participating in. July through September is, again, pretty busy for us, but it's a lot of fun, and we're super excited for all of these and finding ways to interact directly with our customers and neighbors and the communities. So our water utility will be leading a booth at Lake Stevens Aquafest this weekend. We will be at three national night outs on August 1st, including Snohomish County's event, and then events at the City of Sultan, which will have the ARC trailer, in the city of Snohomish. And then in addition, we'll have the Evans Community Fair, as well as countless other ones throughout August that we can say all about next time, including the big one, the Evergreen State Fair, at the Monroe Fairgrounds later next month. And I think that's all I have. Are there any questions? Thank you so much for listening to me talk.
We're looking forward to September when we have the Aqua Socks.
Yeah, and then we have Family Day, and that'll be a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
So.
Can't wait.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you, David. There was the legislative report that was in your packet. We have folks from the Johnson's team here to answer any questions that we have.
Well, I thank you for linking to those hearings. The Congress, the House, had these field hearings, and I have yet to listen to those, but And I will do it. I will do it. I'm grateful to have the links.
Thank you.
I don't have any questions, do you, Commissioner Olson?
Going back to my check mark. I don't have questions, no, but I spent a lot of Sundays reading all these things. They're great.
Excellent. All right. Next up is an IRP update with Garrison Marr, Chris Scudder, and Landon Snyder. Afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, commissioners.
Wow.
Thank you for having us.
We look forward to it. A lot of interest in this topic.
Yeah, well, this is going to be pretty exciting. You know, this is about 60% of the IRP that we'll be talking about today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's still quite a bit more to come, but this is a good portion of what that study would look like. So I'm Garrison Marr. I'm the Senior Manager of Power Supply. I'm joined by Chris Scudder and Landon Snyder, who are really comprising our IRP team and helping us lead this cross-functional effort. And I'll let you know about the agenda here. So we want to provide an update on the operational environment, sort of a refresher on what is the scope, what does the IRP need to be thinking about. And we'll share progress on the IRP to date. That'll include phases 1, 2, and 3 of the 5-phase study. So there'll still be phases 4 and 5 to come later this fall. And we'll talk about next steps and when you'll hear about those pieces. So just as a reminder, this briefing is really more informational, no big decisions to be made today. We want to make sure that we're bringing the commission and the public along as we complete portions of the study. We're actively listening for feedback so that we can tune forward towards the balance of the study. And we expect that we'll have additional briefings, likely an open house with the public, and we intend to close the year in December with an adopted IRP. That's the path we're headed towards. So before I hand it off to Chris and Landon to talk through the phases that have been worked through today, I would like to just take a moment and talk about what has changed since the last IRP. This is that operational environment. And by operational environment, I really mean, where does the PUD kind of position itself within policy environment, technology, consumer preference environment, wholesale electricity prices? What are the things that we need to be aware of, measure, and respond to in a holistic resource strategy to set us up well for the future? So these are the elements that have changed. The first, the post-2028 contract has some more clarity to it relative to the last time we talked and relative to the 2021 IRP. Last week, we got the draft policy record of decision. That gives us some good information, not final and not complete information, about our tier one or at cost federal power allocation. It's a building block for this IRP and resource strategy. And the work that Lena will present today will be reflective of that allocation. Get more certainty surrounding our regulatory obligations. Here I'm talking most specifically about the Climate Commitment Act and its impact on our own regulatory compliance obligations and the wholesale electricity markets. Those markets or market development efforts are more mature. We have 2 day-ahead markets competing right now to establish themselves in the Western United States. We have a better idea of what the fundamental design elements will look like. AMI is rolling out, which gives us new tools and new resources to partner with our customers to provide incentives for how demand shows up and what the overall cost of load service looks like across all customers. And you'll see reflected in the materials that we present some cross-functional work to really think about what we can offer and forecast that across the study period. Regional resource adequacy initiatives are more developed. We have a better idea of what our capacity obligations will look like into the future. This study will reflect that. And finally, we've got a lot of electrification load forecast changes headed our way. That's probably going to be the headline from this presentation today. And it informs the scale of resources that we anticipate we'll need in the future, something we'll all need to prepare for and have a great resource strategy for. We will incorporate the governor's transmission bill, which has a change to the IRP statute. We won't get into that a whole lot in this presentation, but just want to flag that that is one thing that we'll also be working on.
Regarding the requirement for transmission assistance, that will be required.
That will be required of all utilities that meet the threshold to file IRPs like ourselves. So those utilities over 25,000 customers. So we will be adding a new section to the IRP that'll take on our new responsibilities there.
Because when I think of transmission, I think, well, it's mostly BPA.
That's true.
We play a part in that. Maybe you'll clarify more later.
Yeah, well,
when the statute comes out.
Yeah, well, we'll jump into that more in phase four and phase five, and you'll see it in the IRP document. But you're right, more of that planning is being taken on by Bonneville, but we also have to assess our own portfolio of transmission. And there's an element that we'll put in there as well.
Thank you.
So with that, I will hand it over to Chris and Landon to walk through phases one through three of this IRP. You know, we're listening for feedback. We've got a lot of content, and I want to be respectful of the time budget that we've got for this agenda too. So, you know, our opening idea is that it might be better if we held the questions until the end, unless there's some clarification that's needed to understand the slides. Then we can have kind of that Q&A session towards the balance of the presentation. So with that, I'll hand it off to Chris to talk through where we've been so far.
Thank you, Garrison. Good afternoon, commissioners. I am Chris Gutter. I work in Power Supply Department for Garrison. And I'm going to start you off here just to get us all situated where we're at. This is our five-phase process that we go through for an IRP. We are in phase three, or at the end of phase three. We came to you back in January with phase one, and we have a really aggressive timeline here, but we are on track to meet our obligations, and we will be back with a draft IRP coming up towards the end of the year. We're planning to come to you in the fall to cover phases four and five. Today, we're going to cover phases two and three, and then we're going to have to adopt an IRP by the end of the year, December. So I'm going to start off with a little bit of refresher on that January briefing. So what we talked about in January was the scope of the IRP, and that is contained on that table on the left. So for context, the IRP is going to study three load trajectories, as contained on the y-axis there, low, base, and high load curve. All three of those scenarios do incorporate electrification and climate change assumptions. So think of these more as economic forecasts that we could potentially be in. So if we have a high forecast, that means economic activity is active. We have potentially a boom. And conversely, if a low economic forecast happens, we'd be in a low load growth scenario. We also are going to be studying three different Bonneville power products. That would be the block slice product, which we are now, the load following product, or a block with shaping capacity product. Just for a big asterisk here, that is, this is not a presentation or not an analysis to determine which of those products we're going to pick. We don't have enough information at this point to actually pick one of those products. What this is going to tell us is whether the resource strategy that is developed will work well across those products, and if we're setting ourselves up for any potential product in the future. Want to take a little diversion here out of IRP land for just a second to talk about the public process for the IRP that we've done to date. We did our kickoff back in January with you, the commission. We did an open house here at the ED in February. Online, we hosted Power Talks in March. And then a huge success for us was the Energy Block Party, which was probably the biggest Q&A to date. And it would be remiss of me if I didn't shout out the corporate communications people for setting that up. It was a huge success. What we've heard so far is our customers are want to make sure that the PUD is proactively planning for electrification and load forecasts. They've heard about this in the news. They understand that the utility world is changing and that they hear about, you know, utilities wanting to procure more energy. Secondly, we've heard that they're interested in rooftop solar and incentives to potentially help the PUD meet its energy needs. So in later slides, we're going to talk about how we've incorporated that feedback and how we're looking at rooftop solar in this IRP. And finally, we've heard consistently that our customers are excited about new technology and they want us to evaluate new technologies that are available to us. So we're going to take a look at some of those in a future slide where we talk about the resources that are available to us. Going forward, we're also going to plan to have more customer interaction as we go through this process. And we should be doing at least a couple more engagements as we head towards that December finish line. I'm going to pass it over to Landon here, who's going to talk about the next part.
All right. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Landon Snyder. I work with Garrison as an analyst here in the power supply. Now we're going to talk about phase two. So if you take one thing from this presentation today, this is probably going to be the most important slide. And this is probably the message. And that message is recent policy and market environment changes are expected to bring a significant increase in load, specifically from new electrification to the PUD. So let's take a look at the graph on the right and kind of learn how to read it here. So the stacked color-coded areas behind the two red and black lines there, those show the major segments of load and load growth over time, so through the 2045 period starting in 2024. The rate of EV growth, so that's the orange area, is the fastest across the segments and reflects the policy changes on the West Coast. Vehicle manufacturers have announced plans for EV offering transitions. But still, the residential load is also significantly growing, and that's caused by a combination of population growth over time, as well as an increasing proportion of electricity serving total energy needs. So again, Garrison kind of mentioned in the beginning, new HVAC systems that are all electric nowadays, things like that. But the two lines, let's talk about those. So there's the red line, that is the and then compare that with the black line. So the black line shows the 2021 IRP net load after forecast conservation in rooftop solar. So the stack shows everything before conservation and rooftop solar come into play. The lines show that net. So the black line was where we thought we'd be in the last IRP cycle over time. But since the new load forecast has come out with new electrification, the red line is where we think we're going to be. So there's a pretty significant delta between the two now. However, while this growing demand certainly means the PUD will need to rise to the challenge, it should also be viewed as an opportunity. PUD is a public service organization providing electricity at cost to our customers. So as we step into a role serving a larger share of our community's total energy needs, we have the opportunity to contribute more to our community. All right, so we talked about the growing demand in that last slide there, which is the first half during what is called our long-term load resource balance, or LRB. Forecast, which is effectively what this graph displays. So the LRB is kind of like a problem statement that we have to solve. So we should not be surprised that the growing demand, as shown in the last slide, will cause resource needs beyond what our current portfolio of resources can provide throughout the future. So specifically, what we're looking at here is that this graph shows the two constraining metrics within the LRB, in which our portfolio optimization process, which is phase four coming soon, will effectively solve. The green shaded area there shows the monthly on-peak need at the fifth percentile. So think of that as like a 1 in 20 years. And then you'll also notice there's a red dotted line, and the gap that's between the red dotted line and that green shaded area is the additional capacity on top of that energy that we're going to need in that same fifth percentile within those same months and same years. So generally speaking, the green shaded area, the energy need is going to be solved by energy resources. So think wind, solar, hydro, things like that. The capacity needs, so that's that red dotted line that go stretch above that green shaded area, those are going to be solved by dispatchable resources. So think battery storage, things like that. All right, so that was phase two, which talks about resource needs. And now we move to phase three, which provides resource options to solve that problem statement on that last graph that we saw. So we'll start with the supply side resource options, which is about half the story. And supply side resources are those resources that can generate electricity supply to serve load. This is the supply side resource menu as seen here. And we divide resources into three categories: baseload, variable, and dispatchable. So baseload resources are typically resources with firm or mostly firm energy generation profiles. Variable resources are things like standalone renewables, so solar, wind, runner over hydro, which have, as the name might suggest, variable energy generation profiles. And lastly, we have dispatchable resources. So those are capacity resources like batteries or pumped hydro storage, things like that. Most of these resources have been studied in past IRPs, thus are not new ideas. However, the bold and underlined resources, as seen here, are resources that have not been studied in our past IRPs and thus are new to us to study in this IRP. So specifically, new baseload resource options that I'm going to call out here are BPA Tier 2 power. So in the past, the PUD has not been eligible for this resource because we've not exceeded our Tier 1 power or our at-cost power, our at-cost power allocation from BPA. But in the next contract, we're probably going to do that. So we will be eligible for this market-based rate power product from BPA, so we're going to study that. Next is SMRs, or small modular nuclear reactors. So this would evaluate the economic viability of Eastern Washington next generation nuclear technology, not as an owner of the project, but very specifically as a power purchaser of a portion of the total project's output. Staff believe that given the scale of the coming customer demand, it will be a good idea to evaluate all clean energy options, and there are multiple projects being marketed in the kind of early to mid 2030s right now. Lastly, and probably the most interesting, maybe depending on your perspective, is local fusion, and this is as a result of community discussion. Everett happens to be the fusion capital of the world with our local companies just by happenstance. This addition to the menu for consideration will provide the district a low risk opportunity to access a share of the market price local fusion output, as it could be part of the 2040s resource strategy, which we, as we all aware, is a portion of this study period that will be updated many times as we approach the 2040 period. So we do an IRP every 4 years and an update every 2 years thereafter. So we'll have lots of future IRPs to kind of study and see how this fusion comes along. Reflect that technology change throughout that period. Next, we move over to that middle table there, which is variable resources. So what's new here is our local run-of-river hydro buyout. So rather than just studying the development of a brand new run-of-river hydro project, also called a new stream development, this IRP is going to study the potential of buying out a generic already existing west of Cascades run-of-river hydro project, which may help the PUD access a licensed hydro project faster and perhaps even cheaper than a new development process. Next on the variable is that one at the very bottom there, the customer rooftop solar incentive. So Chris kind of spoke to this a little bit, but this was a specific request from customers during our public engagements. So in this IRP, we're going to assess whether a provision of a one-time upfront solar incentive to our customers on top of the current net metering policies that exist could result in a reduced cost of load service for all customers by accelerating what will be the installed nameplate. So in short, we have a forecast of what we think the rooftop solar is going to be through over time. What if we kind of front-loaded some amount of that through this incentive? And then how does that affect our portfolio? Is it cost effective? And then to round us out on the new resources, there's one new dispatchable option that we'll study, and that's the local run-of-river hydro capacity uprate there. And that is us taking a look at evaluating whether the facility enhancements to our existing run-of-river hydro projects could yield cost-effective capacity on top of what they currently do. Right. And now, the next two slides are going to illustrate ways to think about the cost in which these supply-side resources will help meet our energy and capacity needs. So, all right, so levelized cost of energy, also called LCOE, is a way to illustrate the cost to energy benefit a resource provides across its lifespan on a dollars per megawatt hour basis. So that's that left-hand y-axis. Each of these numbers corresponds to a 2024 delivery date for an apples-to-apples comparison, but that is not necessarily realistic. Not all of these resources will be available in 2024. Nonetheless, it gives a fair comparison. Additionally, I want to point out this metric is more for illustration purposes and does not necessarily speak to the overall preference or performance of a resource relative to our actual need. Okay? So baseload resources, that's kind of that left-hand side there. So there's a four of them there. These are resources that have fuel or storage costs, which explain why the LCOE is higher than variable resources, which don't have fuel costs. So wind is, you know, quote unquote, free, so is sun, right? And thus, those variable resources, generally speaking, do have a lower LCOE. Next, we have our dispatchable resources. Now, these resources do not help with generic energy needs, and instead help with those capacity needs. So think of it like this. Essentially, these resource types will generate energy during periods of highest need and then do so at the flick of a switch. So that's their benefit. This is a good opportunity to point out, and if you look on that far right, there's a 50 megawatt natural gas reference plant. So I want to point out that we will run analysis on this plant only to satisfy portion of CETA, which provides for an analysis of whether any incremental costs are created by state policy. So staff's recommendation is still to consider only clean energy resources in order to minimize regulatory risk for the PUD, and then and remain focused on our community clean energy goals. Okay. So this slide showed us a way to think about the cost to energy benefit of these resources, and the next slide is going to show our cost to capacity. Specifically, we're looking at what's called.
No, I've got a million questions, but I think they're going to be for them. I'm just absorbing this.
All right. So next is levelized cost of winter capacity, specifically, but it's also levelized cost of a capacity, also called LCOC, as opposed to LCOE. So this is a way to think about the relative cost to capacity benefit a resource provides for specifically winter seasons, in this case, across its lifespan, on a dollars per megawatt basis. So another way of thinking about LCOC is that it's a metric that shows the capacity contribution of a resource relative to its total nameplate, okay? Or another way of thinking about nameplate is the maximum technical output. Much like the LCOE on the last slide, this slide shows a 2024 delivery date, which again is not reflect realistic delivery dates of most of these resources, but it gives us that level playing field. Now, looking at the graph, we see a nearly inverse pattern to the previous slide. So the previous slide, the dispatchable resources were the most expensive on an LCOE basis, but on an LCOC basis, as one might expect, they are by far the cheapest. And that's again because they have the highest capacity content per nameplate and thus, again, the lowest LCOC. There are many dispatchable resources that are close in price point. However, I should note that there are differences in their scale, time of availability, and other technical attributes, things like dispatch duration, and you get into the weeds with all that stuff. So then we get into the variable resources, and these will have, generally speaking, the lowest winter capacity contributions, and as a result, the highest capacity costs. This isn't unexpected. These are energy resources, and their principal value proposition is the provision of that energy, not necessarily the provision of capacity. Baseload resources are kind of in the middle. They sit in the between the groups in terms of their relative content to capacity cost. So they are firmer energy resources with a capacity to energy ratio that's close to 1:1. So think of them as kind of more or less always on. And as a result, they provide energy value and capacity value, but do not offer the lowest for either. So if you, this way, if you have kind of a need for both energy and capacity, then baseload resources are kind of good. But that covers LCOE and LCOC, which leaves us one last thing to cover before I hand it back over to Chris. And that one last thing is this graph here, and that's going to be our wholesale market energy price forecasts. So we make these forecasts because we need a way to apply a monetary value to every megawatt hour of energy generated by any given resource over the full study period all the way through the end of 2045. This final slide shows that shows the four different market energy price forecasts at the Mid-C trading hub that will be used or studied in this IRP. Different from previous IRPs, though, is that the market price forecasts are not necessarily similar in shape or magnitude. This is because of the uncertainties in policy, technology, and market environments have created some fairly divergent views of what the future market prices could look like. So while these price trajectories differ on an annual average basis, as you can see here on the graph, this graph does not show hourly and seasonal price volatilities, which are very different from scenario to scenario. So these market price forecasts are sourced from other regional IRPs as well as our own internal work here at the PUD. And we think that incorporating a diversity of forecasts will help the PUD better measure and manage risk. So specifically, each scenario in the IRP, and if you think back to Chris's slides earlier, so we have the low growth, base growth, high load growth, each of those will be tested against each market price environment here, as opposed to just a single corresponding environment. As a way to mitigate market risk or really capture it. Essentially, one resource portfolio might perform really well in one of these scenarios, but not in others. Okay? So if we measure and account for that, it'll help us create a more robust and resilient long-term resource strategy, but you have to stay tuned until the end of phase four, so our next briefing to really see that. So all of this IRP phase three presentation thus far has been me talking about supply side resources. But that's only one avenue that we have to pursue in order to meet our customers' needs throughout the future in that cost-effective, environmentally sustainable, and reliable, resilient manner. So with that in mind, I'm gonna stop talking and hand it over to Chris, who's gonna talk about demand-side resources such as conservation and demand response. Thank you.
Okay. So Landon just got done talking about your supply side resources, your solar farms, your wind farms, your batteries. Let's talk about conservation and energy efficiency, which is our demand side resources. Couple things to note here. On this slide, I want you to take a notice of the big teal and orange area on the left. We have lots of opportunities here for low cost conservation that can really help, us in the future. We're well positioned to achieve a lot of conservation at low cost, especially in the annual energy measures. On the right, the measures are a little more distributed, but there's still a significant portion of winter energy efficiency that is available at those lowest cost buckets. Just so the difference between annual and winter, when you're thinking annual energy measures, think things that provide energy benefits over the course of a year. When you're thinking winter measures, think things that are more beneficial in the winter, maybe radiant heating or heat type measures. So they provide different benefits to different parts of the season. But the biggest picture here is we have a lot of opportunities for low cost conservation. I wanted to do a comparison between 2021 and 2023. Every time we do an IRP, we do a CPA, a conservation potential assessment. And this is a short comparison of what we've seen in the last couple of years. On the left is our 2021 analysis, and on the right is the 2023 analysis. As you can see, the stack is bigger on the right. So we have more conservation available, but the bars inside that stack have shifted a little bit. The green is residential conservation, the yellow is commercial, and the gray is industrial. So our residential sector is getting larger. So, and that is a result of data analytics providing us data from internal use, and we have been able to find more opportunities in the residential sector for conservation going forward. Next thing I want to talk about is a little bit different. This is new-ish. For the last couple free cycles, we've done demand response potential assessments as well, or DRPAs. This is the demand response potential assessment programs that we are currently looking at. A couple things to note here. First of all, this DRPA is unique in that we are incorporating a built-in assumption of time of use rates, and we're going to be building in some partnerships with our customers. So those won't necessarily be options for the IRP to pick. They're going to be pre-built. Then on top of that, the IRP will have the option to pick these resources as well. These are opportunities for us to partner with our customers to provide benefits for each of us, win-win scenarios. On the right here, we have smart rates. That's giving our customers rate choices, and this harkens back to AMI rollout and the ability to get these programs. On the left, you have kind of the smart grid ready devices, your smart devices. The one I want to highlight here is behind the meter storage. Think power walls or customers installing a battery on their home, and we have potential incentives for access to that sort of program. So these we want to make sure it's noted here that any of these programs that would be developed would be developed in partnership with our customers and would provide opportunities for everybody to participate. Last slide with content here. I want to talk some next steps. So phase four is our resource optimization, and phase five is our resource strategy. So we're going to be coming back to you in the fall with the results of phase four and five, and we'll be presenting a draft IRP for review. We are on track to get our IRP done and adopted in December. So there's a lot to come still, but we definitely want to open ourselves up to feedback and input from the commission. So we're providing as many opportunities as we can. And finally, our goal is to set up the PUD for a long-term nimble strategy that can work well in a variety of environments. So the IRP is setting us up for that goal. And that is it for us. I'll open it up for questions and discussion. I'm sure there's lots jotted down there. We went through a lot in a very short amount of time, so.
Commissioner Olson, do you have a question?
I
do, but go ahead. You first.
Well, mine is very broad in terms of unpredictability and uncertainty throughout this thing. And I, as you're moving forward, I would like to hear any risk that you might see in, let's say, a specific strategy that we adopted due to these uncertainties. I can't believe that there isn't any. And so I'd like to, as you move on into the other presentations, I'd like to get a handle on that.
Sure.
And recognizing that, do we really know what's ahead of us? I mean, the list of things is broad, and I'm sure that will be added to over time.
You step out on a limb here and say there are more things we're uncertain about than we are certain about. We have more uncertainty in a lot of scenarios than we do certainty.
And therefore, I'm just, throughout your subsequent presentations, there is uncertainty, but I'd like to gain an understanding of what you present to us is handled like now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So. We want to make data-driven decisions, so we'll use a quantitative framework to evaluate the economics of different scenarios. But then at the end, as we develop a resource strategy, will also bring to this commission, like we did in the last IRP, qualitative screens that evaluate risk that is not quantitative, that could materially impact cost and risk to our customers. So you'll get all of that as part of a resource strategy that will be recommended, and we'll have a good discussion about
it. I recognize that you have, but I think it becomes more important as we look to the future. Thank you. So in phase four, you use the phrase each potential future. And so could you expand on that or expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, so that's going back to that scenarios where we could have low load growth, high load growth. These created divergent set of futures. And we want to be prepared because we don't know which world we're going to end up in.
Great.
That makes it, that might not make it any clearer, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to understand what you meant by that. And I know when we went through the strategic plan process with thousands of little stickers and all these possibilities and potential futures, there are many possibilities. And the cultural and political situation or climate in our country, in our world, is so in an uproar right now. So all of these things are going on. I wanted to ask you about your thinking about local run-of-river hydro capacity uprate. What is uprate?
So the idea of adding facility enhancements to existing projects to see if they can offer additional capacity benefit on top of what they currently do.
Already existing hydro projects.
Right, yeah. So yes. think Callaghan or Hancock or Young's Creek, things like that are projects that are operating right now.
Yes. And that's another topic. I just sometimes I wonder how much they're helping us. As we have low flows and hard winters, and that's not when they perform the best. So when you're talking about possibly buying out some existing hydro projects, how would we, as commissioners or the general public, know where they are and what you're thinking about? Because I don't want to be caught off guard.
So. I think Garrison was the handle. I like Garrison handle.
So we always think about resources generically in the IRP. We look at the economic opportunities, we look at what our needs are, and we look to find the cost-effective way to satisfy those needs. We're aware of multiple regional projects that are being marketed and have been marketed for off-takers. So we do think that that opportunity is real out there. We would first in an IRP make an economic case, if there is an economic case, for the buyout. And afterwards, you know, that would be a direction from commission to do due diligence on the projects that are out there and bring them back. So we wouldn't anticipate it's a blank check at the IRP for a specific project, but that it would point towards a due diligence process where we'd make an informed decision together.
Of course. Okay, so that means that there are some local run-of-river projects that are out there, and how would we know about those? How can we find them?
The short answer is the folks that want to sell them call all the people that think they might buy them. So we've gotten calls throughout the last few years about projects that maybe be thinking about finding a new long-term ownership structure.
So they're local? What do you mean by local? How big is local? How broad is local?
Probably think, a 4 to 5 county range all west of the Cascades, okay. North and south. Something that we could reasonably access, through the transmission pathways.
Okay.
And we're just at the place now where we're doing economic analysis to see if this could be a winner. So there's no foregone conclusions that this is the path that makes the most sense. But we want to be able to, with that scale of resource need, really take a look at everything we could do, because it's possible we may have some version of let's do multiple things, and we want to understand what are the multiple things that could make sense for our customers. This is just the start of that.
Just all I'm trying to say is that I don't want to be caught off guard, to repeat myself, and hear that we're going to take advantage of some local hydro that I never even heard about. So I hope you'll keep us up to date on your thinking on those, because the environment is extremely important that we protect it, and all of the environment alongside that hydro, not just the rivers themselves, but all the creatures in and around those rivers. So, you know, I just want to state my concern about that. But I know you're focused on the economics and what's best for us, and we have to be thinking about that.
Let me just jump in here really quick. So, kind of do a refresher. If you think back to our last IRP, same process. Garrison and team are looking at all the potential opportunities or options for resources. The last IRP, we went through the due diligence, came out of that saying we need X number of megawatts, and the best, most cost-effective, viable resource was battery storage, which is why we are now pursuing the battery storage project. They're at the same place with this year's or this term's IRP, and just throwing all the different resource options out there that will be evaluated to determine what the best option is going forward, that you would then give the approval to go and pursue.
And so are we going to be having an update on the storage developments, what we're doing, what we're thinking about storage?
Yes, we'll continue to provide updates on where we are with the battery storage project.
Okay. Because I know Commissioner Logan raised the question one time about the costs of what we have and what we might buy, and maybe we should be thinking about what's already developed and not be having to do so much experimentation and whatever on the cost. So yeah, I'm thinking on the Mesa projects.
This isn't the Mesa project.
Oh, okay.
This is a proven, you know, commercialized battery storage project,
right.
Which is where we're headed. Yeah, not different than the R&D Mesa project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's see if I have, okay, local fusion. You said that Everett is kind of the center of local fusion, and which is becoming in about maybe the 2040s. Talking about hydrogen.
We're talking about the local fusion companies, so Zapp and Helion are two examples of those local companies that are working on commercial scale projects. They have target dates in the 2030s. We've had lots of conversations with them. We are wanting to consider that even further in our study period, and at a small portion of what our future forecast need looks like, just to say, hey, is there an opportunity for us to create win-win community partnerships that could support local economic development and also cost-effectively meet a customer need that we anticipate we'll have? So clearly, nothing that we do in 2023 is going to be a binding decision in the 2040s, but there's a lot of promise with that technology. If it could work well anywhere, we'd love it to work well here.
And so what are we thinking about hydrogen?
Hydrogen is not on this menu.
It's already happening in California. And it seems like we should be able to. I mean, that's got to come through the legislature first. And I think that so we should be seriously looking at that.
We can take that to do. I think the judgment was that at the 30%, efficiency rates, that storage was going to be a more efficient store of renewable energy for us than hydrogen at this point in that technology development without another end use for that hydrogen. So we can absolutely take that feedback back, though.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we probably should get clarification on that, though. I mean, keep in mind again that the team looks at all of those available options. It's not like we haven't looked at hydrogen. It's not at the development stage where we think it makes sense to put it into our list of.
Well, Garrison, I don't think this board, I don't want the, you to feel that the board is sending any kind of a message. Just that, that the scope needs to include that. We have one commissioner that's not here, and those kinds of things are.
It's not a request, it's a question. What are we thinking about hydrogen? Looking at other states that are doing it, especially California, it just has come to, it has occurred to me that we might be thinking about that too.
But again, I would repeat that something like that, I would prefer to have the full board in attendance, even to post that to staff. Lights are full, a lot to consider. And again, I just want us, I want to understand how the uncertainties will fit and how we're going to manage those with what's brought forward for our consideration.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. You've done a lot of work to figure that all out, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you all for the great questions. We're looking forward to coming back and sharing even more, and we'll have another open house so we can talk with our customers about this too. Make sure we're all on the same page.
Thank you.
And I want, this is not a question, it's just a compliment. I like the way you lay this out, the presentation, it flowed well, and I did appreciate that.
Chris Scudder's special.
Thank you.
Well, that takes talent, I think all three of you. Thanks, talent that I don't have.
Yeah, great job, Garrison, Chris, and Wayne.
Don't you have anything more under your briefing and study session?
No, that is it.
Okay, so we'll move into the comments from the public. We have three members of the public who would like to comment today. I'd like to call first Mr. Steve Keeler. Stephen Keeler. Hello. Mr. Keeler has bought some
this
materials.
This is
the
material.
Mr. Keeler bought some materials regarding energy-related carbon dioxide emissions by sector and source, and also questions about BPA and what BPA is doing on battery data.
My name is Stephen Keeler. I'm a resident of Edmonds, Washington. Good afternoon, commissioners.
Welcome.
I had recently the time and the wherewithal to renew my acquaintance with the Washington Public Public Meetings Law, and that certainly has answered a question I posed here recently about time and time limits. So I now understand that. Commissioners, moving on, referring back to the wire, the June issue, the problem we're trying to solve, the example of 25 megawatt energy storage project has the ability to serve 20,000 average homes for an hour during times of peak demand. I wasn't sure about something. I looked at the United States Census for 2023, specifically Snohomish County. It turns out there are 333,000 plus housing units. That number kind of blew me away. I knew it had grown, but I wasn't realizing it was that big. About 70% of them are owner-occupied. Commissioners, if this is going forward, I can only suggest that this time you're going to need a much bigger battery. I don't know who's going to pay for it, how it's going to affect my rates, but I think your battery is going to get pretty darn big. Moving on, that was a question I had posed to you. Moving on, I posed another question to you. It's about the BPA Balancing Authority Load and Total BER graph. I had asked, do you know what's missing from the graph? My answer is a plot line for something I call battery, B-A-T-T-E-R-Y. There is no plot line for battery on the BPA graph. I didn't know why, I didn't understand that, so I sent an email to BPA, and they were kind enough to respond. You have a copy of that email I'll just leave it to you to read their response and consider that further. Interesting response. Begs a lot of questions. I'd like to thank the team today for their presentation. I thought they did an excellent job. I may comment on their output in the future. Thank you, all three of you. Finally, commissioners, in closing, I'd like to point out that you have an update from the Energy Information Agency. I present the chart to you. It's for 2023 without comment. And I want to point out there's one acronym that may confuse you. The acronym is capital M, lowercase m, T, lowercase T. That stands for 1 million metric tons, in this case, of carbon dioxide. Those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to call on Mr. Tom Crisp at this time. Welcome, Tom.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you very much for your diligence and good work. I'm Tom Crisp. I live right here in Everett, Washington. Over the years, I've been very impressed with how hard you've worked and the display I've seen of the staff and the community. It's been super, and you've developed a very great reputation. I just want to point on the reputation. You are sometimes affected by the people you associate with or other associations, and you've heard comments about Northwest River Partners. So as a I'd like you to look closely in terms of your association partners and whether that is actually a positive thing. I think personally is a point to improve upon. You may want to step back away from that association because of its conduct. You've heard much about that and I'm sure you've heard more. Thank you again very much. You've done an excellent job on behalf of the community. And your work throughout the state and nation is very, very excellent.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. And Don Miller, would you have to make your comments now, please?
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Don Miller, D-O-N-M-I-L-L-E-R. I live in Arlington, Washington. So I'd also like to thank you for the presentation this afternoon. We have a complex future ahead of us. In energy. I was at the June 27th board meeting and there was mention of the Northwest Tribal Clean Energy Summit. And there's a couple things discussed in that I'm aware of. One was the Yakima tribe and their mechanical energy storage on a large scale that they're looking into and trying to energy storage to integrate the utility scene in the Northwest. The other is the Nez Perce and their Nimiku energy utility that they have in place and are working to expand on clean renewable energies. And the primary purpose in that is to replace the outputs of older Snake River dams. So as a way to help in their recovery of salmon and their fishing culture. I'm wondering from my local utility, that sponsored that conference, how that fits in with the membership in Northwest River Partners. When that organization has run a multi-million dollar campaign to discredit efforts to try to find solutions to issues on the Snake River. They've had false information and fear tactics, and Snohomish County PUD is using ratepayer money and their membership to support that. 153,000 a $1,000 for last year. $430,000 of ratepayer money for the last 3 years. So I'm left with the question of why that is. Why that doesn't seem to match up across purposes. I've spoken in the past with one of the commissioners about the Snake River, and that discussion went is they need to figure something out. It can't go on the way it's been. There are a lot of efforts in the region right now to build solutions that address all the communities, not just some of them, and really it's all the region, you know. Well, it branches out to effects for our whole region. Those are good earnest attempts happening at the federal level, happening at the state level. So why do we spend $430,000 to try to negate that, to derail it? I don't know the answer to that, but I'd like you to think about it, I guess. Whatcom County PUD figured it out. They decided to drop their membership. They didn't want to spend their $6,000 membership to basically sabotage legitimate efforts to try to find solutions for the Snake River. So they did it for just $6,000. We're dealing with $430,000. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Don. Thank you very much. Okay.
Do you have more public comment? No more public comment from online listeners.
Okay. Are there any other comments from the public on items not on the agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record if you're online or if you're Zooming in. Do we have anybody?
I think the first one's going to be Gayla Schuming.
Gayla, please. Okay, welcome, Gayla.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. I would like to support what Mr. Miller just said to begin with. I have a couple of other things to talk to you about. Number one is that the PUD says that one of the things that's they're important to them is getting out to their customers. However, you expect the customers to come to the PUD whenever you have a meeting. How about you have a meeting every now and then in Linwood or Edmonds or Marysville or Arlington? Go out to the customers to make it easy for them. I think that would be a great idea. We've been doing that in several other meetings and groups that I belong to, in order to get out to the people rather than expecting them to come to you. The second thing is, I was interested in the IRP report today, but I am concerned overall with our dependence on the BPA. We are working on climate issues, and I'm not sure what the BPA is working on. And if you could let us know what the BPA is actually doing to address the climate issues, I would be delighted. I did find that, for example, Seattle City Light, they control over 80% of their hydro. That is, they own those dams. We don't. We depend about 80% or maybe more on BPA. So if something would happen to BPA, we would be definitely up a creek without a paddle. I think about the solar that's in Arlington, which is so wonderful. And I think that one thing that would be that would help us to be more independent would be to look around at the other vacant lots around Snohomish County, the lots that cannot grow food, that cannot be used otherwise, in very good shape, but to put solar farms like the one in Arlington all across our county. That would give us more independence in case something happens to the BPA. I'm just concerned that we have not looked seriously at the issues and the amount of electricity we're going to need. So I know Garrison and his team have been working really hard. I wish they would consider making more solar farms like the one in Arlington. Thank you. Again, Gayla Smith from Edmonds.
Thank you very much. Okay. Is there anyone else?
There is. We have one more phone number ending in 5033.
Okay. Whoever is at that number, we welcome your comments. Please identify yourself.
Hello. Yes, I'm here. Am I being called upon?
Yes, you are.
Hi, I'm Donna Lutze from Edmonds, and I was grateful to all of you, as all the speakers have been. It's always wonderful to be able to understand at least something of what our impressive public power group is up to. I am a Spanish teacher by nature, and there's a Spanish saying, cada loca con su tema. In other words, every crazy woman with her theme. And if you know me at all, you know that my theme is trees. And so I'm thinking so strongly about how water is attracted by trees, is transpired by trees. There's quite interesting information that they actually, the big canopies actually change the weather and bring water, which we are apparently going to need both to cool any nuclear and to cool and to have the volume needed for any hydro. So I'm hopeful that our PUD will take some interest in the preservation of mature trees, as I think Gayla could allow you to know where this is being done right now. And that maybe PUD, for its own vested interest, might participate. The other thing that is dear to my heart right now is the decrease in demand. The more and more I'm able to inform myself about the likely heat emergencies, the less and less likely I am to depend on the solution of the rich, which is air conditioning, but the general population can't afford the electricity or maybe not the original machinery. But building codes have saved lives that I thought maybe PUD might take some interest in, the sense that it would decrease massively use at peak times and save lives. Building codes that do such simple things as insist on cross ventilation in every building, every unit, so that, or at least of new construction, so that people can survive within their house without electrical help. I guess that's more than enough. I again appreciate my ability to say something and also your great presentations. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. All right, do we have anyone else?
We do not.
Okay. Thank you to everybody who's commented today. So we'll now move on to the consent agenda. Approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of July 11th, 2023. Gail Moore's professional services contracts and amendments. In consideration of certification and ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers, I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Mr. Olson, roll aye or nay?
There's no copy.
Oh, the motion. Wait a minute.
We need to ask this question.
Pardon?
Questions. We haven't had the opportunity to ask our questions.
The top box on page 3.
Oh. Is possible. Okay, gotcha. Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Any questions from you regarding the consent agenda?
Should have been looking while you were just discussing. The only question I had was I didn't understand RFP for Energy Services Program Engagement and Management Solution. You know what it is. But the terms, I couldn't follow if the estimate was based on the 1 year. And that's why the increase of the contractor award. You can tell. I don't know. Did we bid just 1 year, or is that 3 years?
Hi, this is Tracy Larkin. This is for 5 year cost of, or 3 years. Sorry, cost of ownership.
Three.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And so the difference. It's up about, so it's up from 556 to 965. So, is this the option for ongoing support or?
Yes, that's okay. Exactly what the costs are.
All right, thank you. I have no other questions.
And I have none either. I'm glad that you brought that up and it was clarified. So I'll call for a vote. Did you vote aye or nay?
Aye.
If I voted aye. Now I'll have a public hearing in action considering a resolution amending the district's water utility wholesale rates for the city of Arlington and the city of Granite Falls. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
I'll now convene a public hearing. Christina Art is available to answer any questions and provide a prior presentation if necessary. Christina? Okay, thank you.
We've had multiple briefings on this.
Right. Do you have any other questions?
I have no question.
I have none. Do you have any? Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Okay, I'll close the public hearing and call for the vote. We vote aye or nay?
Aye.
I vote aye. The resolution is approved. Item five is items for individual consideration. Consideration of a motion accepting the monitoring report, asset protection. Call for a motion.
I move acceptance.
Angela Johnson is available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the monitoring report? There are not. Any questions or comments from you?
I don't. Just to note that there are no executive limitation violations in any section of this report.
Right. So I'll call for the vote. You vote aye or nay?
Aye.
And I vote aye. The resolution is approved. We'll now consider a resolution.
Just to clarify, that wasn't a resolution. That was just the
The resolution.
It was actually
to accept the monitoring report.
It was just a monitoring report motion. It wasn't a resolution. Just accepting it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. The motion, not the resolution. Trying to make sure I didn't fill up all that again. The motion is approved. Now we will consider a resolution appointing Nathan J. Gibson, as deputy auditor for the district. We'll call for motion.
I move approval.
Scott Jones is available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Scott, you still here? Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding the monitoring report?
There are not.
Any questions or comments from you?
No.
Okay. Call for the vote. Do you vote aye or nay?
Aye.
I'll vote aye. The resolution is approved. Now we'll move to the CEO General Manager's report. Are there any reports?
Yeah, I have a few items to share with the board this afternoon. First, from our HR group. Safety Days is just around the corner, and one of this year's focuses at Safety Day is We Power Retirement. We will have representatives and presentations from Mission Square, Department of Retirement Systems, MERS, and Sheba for Medicare. At the HR table to learn all about retirement. The Mentorship Committee sponsored a networking barbecue to encourage mentors and mentees to connect. About 20 of the mentors and mentees joined the event. I had the opportunity to spend some time out there as well. And, great group, and the mentoring program is off and running with a great start. The Job Description Project has been working with managers across the district to finalize job mapping, meaning determining the future job titles of each employee given the work that they do today to prepare for the future changes coming from the Job Description Project. The teams have also started to have conversations with some ELT members to discuss potential budget impacts related to the project. And then three lead Connect Up technicians are being added in August. The Connect Up team begins onboarding to support the AMI installations. This is a huge milestone for the project, for the district, and for our community and customers. From our finance group, our treasury folks, with support from others around the PUD, will be working through a water bond placement process in the coming weeks, as it was planned in this 2023 budget year. And from corporate communications, the business readiness and training team just completed the initial integration with Perceptio and our learning management system. On July 6th, the team brought over 15,000 new online training items within the productivity and collaboration tools catalog. This increases the amount of available online learning for Team PUD and facilitates easier assignment of training by managers to their staff and automatic completion when the employee does complete the assignment. Also, the Everett Herald published on July 17th a story on our crews. Our crew's work in Guam. The story addressed requests we heard from the commission to share information about mutual aid and reimbursement by the Guam Power Authority and FEMA. In addition, it noted that no customers in our service area were negatively impacted by the crew's absence. Also, we recently completed an update to the look and feel of Highlights. It is easier to navigate and read online, while it still works well with the systems we have in place, and it can still be printed. A couple additional items. Brenda White, Commissioner Wolf, Ron McManus, and myself met with Marysville Mayor John Nearing and his staff. Great meeting, and we continue to build an excellent relationship with the city of Marysville. We also, Brenda White and Doug O'Donnell and Tom. Oh my gosh, my mind, I just lost it. Tom Hubby met with Mayor Bart Tolbert and Paul Ellis, the Public Works Director of the City of Arlington. We meet with them about on a quarterly basis, another excellent meeting, and it's great to stay in sync, especially with the amount of industrial growth that they have going on in their area. Last item, we have begun the search for a new executive director for NWPPA. We are using the NRECA search team, which is the National Rural Electric Co-op Association. That seemed to be the most cost-effective approach to searching for and selecting a new executive director for NWPPA. And that's it.
Wow, that's quite impressive. A lot going on.
Yeah, good
and
stuff.
It's a nice report on you getting your own leaders installed.
Oh, yes.
Was that in the daily PUD?
So
district news.
Yeah, it was fun. And already has helped me. I had been watering my grass, and I had a text from Brant Wood, the AGM over water, the next day that said, we really appreciate the revenue. But I came to look and find out that I had a sprinkler head that was leaking. I was able to fix that, and Brent told me over the next couple of days that my water use had gone down significantly. Now, I did also adjust the times that my sprinkler ran a little bit after he told me how much water I'd used the first time, but I'm sure the sprinkler head, leaking sprinkler head, had a lot to do with that. So again, it's just a great example of what the AMI can do for our customers in identifying, you know, energy usage or water usage that may be beyond normal, and it helps troubleshoot what some of the issues could be. So, yeah.
So would you have been able to find that on an app or something, or not yet? To find the information that Grant?
Yeah, so I don't have access to that yet. They do. They're monitoring those systems to just kind of keep track, and it just so happened that they, I should say, luckily, they looked at mine, and Brent brought that to my attention.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Great. Well, congratulations. AMI, you know, in French means friend.
AMI was my friend.
All right, we'll move on. Thank you very much. We'll move on to commission reports. Do you have anything for this?
No.
Wilson? Well, I will agree with John that we had a really good meeting with Mayor Nearing up in Marysville. It's so interesting. There's so much going on up there. And they have a really impressive, beautiful new city hall. Lots going on there. And they were just so gracious and hosted us and gave us a tour, and it was really great. I think that's the main thing on my report. Commissioner event calendar, are there any changes to the commissioner event calendar? Do you have any, Commissioner Olson?
I don't have any changes, no.
I'm trying to think where I should report that I'm leaving today to go to an Energy Northwest meeting, replacing Commissioner Olson because I'm the alternate for Energy Northwest. And I'll go down and learn a lot more about small modular reactors and all of the other things that they're doing in addition to the Columbia Generating Station number 2. So that's my big exciting event for now. And then after that, I'll be going to Portland for PPC, Public Power Council, and PETA. That will be early August. So I really enjoy the in-person opportunities. All right, we do have a 2023 Treasury budget forecast and major project status report for June. Sarah Bond is available to answer any questions regarding the report. Are there any questions from you, Mr. Olson, regarding the report?
Excuse me, I can answer my chat box. Not regarding the financial report, no.
And major projects coming up. Emergency work is slightly above budget. Do the call out work greater than budget? There are no major storms through June. You know, I just often, when I look at the news, I think, oh my gosh, we're so fortunate here that we're not having these 120-degree days. And I've lived in Eastern Oregon, and I know what that's like. So, and I'll be heading over to the Tri-Cities tonight, so I might get to experience it firsthand.
It is warmer on the east side, that's for sure.
For sure. Regarding the, moving on, if we have no further questions regarding the report, June 2023 District Performance Dashboard. Do we have any questions or comments?
I do not have questions on that.
No, I do not either. On governance planning, are there any changes to the governance planning calendar that you know of?
I hope myself back to the agenda.
Okay, here we go. Just a minute. We have a lot of reports in this month.
I'll be excited to hear. It's on August 8th, the Tulela microgrid project. I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah, I'm very interested. And also coming up to be scheduled the organized markets workshop. That's high interest.
That's actually now scheduled for September, but just
not for September now. To be scheduled.
No, it is on the 5th.
But now it's been scheduled to September.
It's on it yet.
Okay, and August 24th, we have a tour of Jackson Hydro, which is going to be a first visit for me.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's exciting.
I've always had a conflict.
I'm so surprised that you've been on the board for what, 5 years?
5 years, and it's never worked out. Well, we had COVID. We had, you know, a couple of years of that. And then 1 year it was scheduled when we had a family trip planned to Michigan. So anyway, this year, this year's the year.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Looking forward to it very much. Is there any further business to come before the board?
I have none.
Okay, hearing none, it is 3:01 p.m. and the meeting is now adjourned.